belly. I asked Margot, "Want a back ride?"
"Are you for real?"
"I used to give you back rides all the time until you were about 5, until you left."
"I'm no longer 5, have gained a little weight, and might be too big for a back ride."
"Never. And I think I might owe you a back ride or 100.
"In that case, yeah, I want a back ride."
We left, and that sound was lost in the animosity around us. She acted like she liked me. All I had to do was kill a man and give her a few Barbie and Cabbage Patch dolls to get her to act like she liked me. If only her mother had been so pliable. Margot said,
"Dad, we have to go save Rachel Redmond from this racial madness."
She told me to hurry.
Did African finger snaps. I had no idea she could do that shit.
It made me proud that she could.
Chapter 38.
An hour later, I was with Rachel. Margot and Kevin were with us. We were in Inglewood's Hyde Park Plaza at Zulu Ethiopian and Eritrean restaurant, eating kitfo, sharing a dozen amazing dishes, talking, laughing, getting to know one another. I still didn't like my daughter's boyfriend. Kevin was from this generation, the soft generation, dependent on bitcoins. He should have been the one who had wrapped my child's problem in plastic and buried it in the ground. But he wasn't like me. What I had done had nothing to do with San Bernardino. It was a father thing. No man would be good enough for her. Same as with Jimmy Lee's self-righteous dad. No man was good enough for his daughter. At least not I. Still, I had learned from the way he had treated Jimmy Lee. Had learned from how my wife was treated by her own father. So, I guess I owed that motherfucker something for that lesson. Unlike him, I respected my child's choices. All of her choices. I couldn't unsee what I had seen on her blackmailer's computer. It hurt. It hurt me bad. I'd never understood how she ended up in such a place. I'd never be able to see life through my daughter's eyes. Just like Margot would never be able to see life through mine. But I did respect her. She was special to me, unique, an Ethiopian child with the blood of Mississippi in her veins, a social experiment come to life. She was a grown-ass woman, some called Sagarita. She had lived in Africa. Her mother had taken her home. She had touched the soil. All roads led back to Africa. A man just had to get off his ass and get on that road. Jake Ellis was on a plane to Ghana. His Mustang had been torched. A bushwhacker had accidentally set himself on fire and died running from the scene, and there had been gunshots in the midnight hour. Slave catchers were asking too many questions, and his landlord had become uncomfortable with the sudden drama. For a man like Jake Ellis, it had gotten too hot, and he was going back home to kick it in the motherland, to lay low a few months and enjoy good jollif. He'd made enough money living rent-free and working for San Bernardino to get by. When he was ready, he'd be back. He'd be right back in Leimert Park. And I was sure his landlord would keep his apartment vacant. She'd be waiting for her lover to come back. While we rode in an Uber, I asked him if Mrs. Garrett was going to meet him in Africa. Jake Ellis answered with a wink, a laugh, and 10 hearty African finger snaps. It wasn't my business. I still envied him, his choices, his freedom. But my complicated life was mine, and his was his. He was Ghanaian, African, going home. I was American, a born Mississippian, still dreaming about a better home than the one I had. I wanted to live where I felt like I belonged, wanted to sink my feet in the soils and swim in the waters from which my people were stolen, if only for a while. Somewhere out there, San Bernardino was sipping champagne. I imagined Mrs. Garrett was in her mansion, eating gelato, music blasting, in high heels, dancing to African music as she counted to 50 million. At LAX, Jake Ellis had told me, "If you come over, that Senegalese girl is still waiting to meet you. She believes that you are the love of her life. She believes that you are her soulmate." I'm happy with Rachel. I'd check back in a few months. You might have to call me in London.
Even better. You'll be closer to Africa.
Bro, why are you always instigating some shit?
Bruv, because it's fun. Because that is what I do.
And you do it so goddamn well.
He did African finger snaps, and we laughed, hugged, and parted ways. I went and caught an Uber back home, rode alone, half smiling, half thinking about what my life had been so far. I had until Rachel decided what she was going to do with that guitar to decide about London. Until I decided if I was going to stop by Home Depot and pay the Russian a midnight visit. If not, if her heart somehow took her back to Russia, even for a night, like Jake Ellis had told me over and over, there was always a Senegalese woman waiting for me to arrive over in Africa. But for now, I was cool. Late at night, Bernice Nesbitt stood in her window every once in a while. But I didn't have the urge to cross the pond. For now, I had Rachel. I had my daughter. I had a grandchild on the way. I had love coming to me like never before, from all directions. For now, I had enough love to hold me here. This is Dion Graham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Bad Men and Wicked Women by Eric Jerome Dickey. This program was directed by Robert Kessler, executive producer Dan Musselman, engineered by Brian Ramcharan. Text copyright 2018 by Eric Jerome Dickey. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.